again. Bought and sold and bought again. The dove is never free. Ring the bells that still can ring.
Greetings from Cortez Island, here on the west coast of Canada. This show is about nature. Yeah, it's about our planet and its living creatures and beasts and plants. I like to say it's the only show on the air with a Gaian perspective. That might not be true, but it's close. Gaian perspective. We live on a self-regulating superorganism, and ecosystems live and ecosystems die. And if we didn't have the death of ecosystems, we wouldn't have the new ones. It's a dynamic place full of change. Well, what a day. We've had some rain here on Cortez. I welcome all my listeners across the globe. Hello, Berlin. Yes, and Miss M and all my friends out east and eastern Canada. On today's show, well, we're going to continue our voyage by ship across the Northwest Passage. And if you've been tuning into my show or you're listening to this on the blog, the journey started on September the 11th. And I think we're now on September the 17th. So we're about 6 days in that journey. And I did an audio log of that voyage every every time something interesting happened, I turned on my recorder, and that's what we've been listening to along the way on my various shows. And this is show number 5, and I just got news that the other 4 shows are now on the blog. You just have to go to CKTZ, Cortez Community Radio, and just go to programs, shows, and there under Nature Boy, you'll see the blogs in case you want to catch some of the previous shows. And really, I totally recommend show number 4. I mean, that's when I had Irish Steigerman talk about journeying across, walking across Greenland by herself. Not the whole place, of course, but 165 kilometers one way and then back. On one of her journeys, yeah, she went back and forth, so 330 kilometers by herself, and no cell phones, none of that nonsense, just her wit. So I totally recommend show number 4. And as well, today we're going to go to Costa Rica at the end of the show, and we'll interview Jack Ewing there at Hacienda Baru on the west coast of Costa Rica. And just talk about his reserve, his nature reserve that he and his wife have created there. But, hey, it's the bird of the week. Yeah, bird of the week. And those of you in out east or in other parts of the world, you're not going to get this bird. It's called the Hutton's Vireo. It's a diminutive bird. In other words, it's smaller than smaller than your hand. It's gray-green, it has 2 pale wing bars. It's really what they call nondescript bird. And there's 2 subspecies here on the west coast. One's on Vancouver Island and one is on the mainland. Now, we're on an island between the mainland and Vancouver Island, so I'm not sure which subspecies we have here. But it is the Hutton's Vireo, and it just started to sing. I was talking to another birder today, and they said that it was singing at their place. And it is the most boring song around. It goes, zhooey, zhooey, zhooey. And I'm actually making it sound better than it is. Yep, and it's because it's now courting and will start making its nest in March. And they do have 2 broods. They'll have another one in June. The eggs take about 14 days to incubate, and the young stay in the nest about 17, 20 days, something like that. And the birds feed them insects, and if they can find fruit this time of year as well. Interesting, if it's such a small bird going after fruit, it would have to be elderberries or something like that. But mostly insects, and its nest is made out of spider webs. Yeah, don't you like that? I love that. It's a bird that makes its nest out of spider webs that hold it together, and it's lined with moss. Of course, it has some twigs and everything on the fork of a limb. And what's really neat about the bird is that it's here year-round. It's one of these insectivorous birds, like the warblers, for instance, but it's here all the time. But it doesn't go much further north than the end of Vancouver Island. So maybe, 55 latitude north would be the most extreme northern record. They certainly don't get them on the Queen Charlotte's. No, I haven't heard of that. So it's really a Vancouver Island, south all the way through California and then Mexico going southward. So it's as far north as it likes to go. And again, it's because of the milder climate that we have here that it can survive here a winter. It looks a lot like the ruby-crowned kinglet, if you're familiar with the little kinglets, except the little kinglet always flicks its wings. And it also has a black, quite definitive line underneath the two wing bars, while the Hutton's vireo, it doesn't have those, that little black line underneath the two wing bars. I mean, birding is really, really, really picky. Yeah, a picky circ. But listen out for Jouy. And why do I point that little, diminutive bird out? It's because now the tide has turned. Spring is... Wow, it's only not long now. What is it? Just the 8th? So you're another 12, 13 days till equinox. And so the birds will be coming, right? And they're actually quite punctual as to when they get to Cortez. And if you're in the Cortez area or anywhere in the South Coast and listening, I understand we can be heard down in Cumberland, but not at the tip of Cortez Island. Isn't that funny? Well, one day we'll get our antenna a little higher up, and then everybody on Cortez will be able to benefit. But if you're up and down the coast, if you can get a copy of Birds of Cortez Island and Middlenatch Island, you can get it from the Cortez Museum. Contact them. They have a website, or Marnie's Bookstore here on Cortez. And you can start predicting when the birds come, like the next batch of warblers. And, of course, the swallows are becoming very, very soon. So pick up that little booklet. I co-wrote it with Christian Grenau and Fred Zwickel quite a few years ago, and I think it's only $5, and it has bar graphs. So there you go, Hutton's vireos. And I noticed Anna's hummingbirds have started to sing too, or something like that. Yes, sir. Okay, the weather. Well, you know what? The rain is heralding a few days of sunshine here for out west, and apparently next Monday we're actually going to break the 10-degree mark, which you haven't broken yet this whole year, and even going up to as high as 14 degrees, and maybe even some sunshine at the same time. So it'll certainly feel like spring. And where we're going in our audio log up to the Northwest Passage to Arctic Bay, it's 31 below right now, and it's going down to 35 below, and it's going to be sunny all week, but it will go up to 21 below. And I was looking at the hours of sunshine because, of course, we're changing here every day. I looked it up, and we're right now, and our days are getting longer, about 3 minutes and 40 seconds every day, okay, until equinox. And then they'll start, they won't, the length of day as it increases will go down until June 21st when it'll be zero, right? If that makes any sense to you. Huh. In Arctic Bay right now, they're almost getting the same number of hours of sunshine, just over 10 hours sunshine. Well, that's tomorrow, isn't it? 10 hours, 18 minutes, and we're more like 10 hours and 34 minutes. So we're actually very, very close to that. But by May the 5th, up in Arctic Bay, they will have 24 hours of daylight. Yeah, oh, that things change around. So there's your weather report. You're listening to CKTZ on Cortez Island. Now, let's see if I can take us to the Northwest Passage. But just to get us into the mood, let's have my old friend Ian Tamlin, and just kind of put a little bit of feeling into the show, an Arctic song about Sedna's children. If you want to Google Sedna, if you happen to be near a computer, Sedna, the goddess that created, in a very odd way, all the sea mammals. And because we will be interviewing a narwhal hunter, I thought this song might work out quite nicely. So let's see if we can make it go rum rum in here.
In the model world of the Northern Ocean and her icebound babe, Sydney's children will be wandering, so the story says. Beluga and the narwhal, the seals and bowheads too, all were born from Sedna's hands to sail the ocean blue. And she is calling, yes, she is calling. Oh, she is calling. Calling to her raven lover, but he's never there, for he seeks her over the mountains, much to her despair. And her children gather all about to brush her seaweed hair, but she can find no comfort till her raven lover's there. And he is calling. Oh, he is calling. Yes, he is calling. Trouble on the water, and there's fear in everyone. What was caused by Sedna's father cannot be undone. In the model world of the Northern Ocean and her icebound bay, Sedna's children will be wandering, so the story says. They are calling. Mm-hmm. They are calling. They are calling.
Incomparable, incredible, indelible Ian Tamlin, who I worked with in the Arctic. He drove the Zodiacs and he wrote songs and performed them on board a ship. I was on a 200-passenger ship in 2016 when we did this voyage through the Northwest Passage, and we were going towards Greenland. So we find ourselves still on Beachy Island, and if you're first time listening to this show, well, Beachy is where Franklin overwintered there, 1845, 46, I believe. I always get those dates wrong. But anyways, a long time ago, right? And then just disappeared. And just a couple of years ago, they finally found the ships, only in 30 feet of water, too, after a long time. Yes, and well, what happened is what Franklin, it was so well equipped that, you know, after 4 years, nobody in England really got worried because, of course, they were going to give him a couple of years to go through the Northwest Passage and get frozen in a couple of times, of course, and eventually come out by Alaska, and then he'd have to sail all the way back to England. But once the fifth year came around and there was no word of Franklin and no word from, like, the whalers, the other ships that were over in Alaska, what had happened to Franklin? So they had to mount this massive expedition to go and look for Franklin. And, well, that's how a lot of the high Arctic was discovered by the Europeans. Of course, the Inuit knew exactly where Franklin was. He was dead. And they knew where the ship was, too, because they lived there. And they'd already been through the Northwest Passage lots of times, hadn't they? Okay, so let's go to Beachy Island. It's snowed about a foot and a half, and I think if everything works, I'm going to be describing Beachy. Let's see how we go here. Nothing yet. Here we go. I'm working on it. Let's have a look here. You know how it is with these technical devices. They want it their way. I think we've got it. There we go.
You can hear the wind behind me, and to the right of me, the cliffs rise, I would say, about 700 feet, and all striated at the top, and great shelves of snow kind of draped over, looking like ocean waves at the very, very top. You wouldn't want to get close to those cliffs from above. Be very dangerous. And then it's a very 45 degree slope, very not too steep, very hard to climb up there anyways, below the cliffs, and then down to where we are here, and then a plateau, and then down to the water, which now has turned a deep gray, a lovely gray, and of course dotted with those multi-year ice flows, as I mentioned earlier, some of the size of a bus, but I see some out there actually the size of a whole house sticking up. And we've come to Northumberland House because historically this is where all the expeditions that went off in search of Franklin came, stayed, let's say, over the winter before setting off into the deep Arctic, in seek of what happened to Franklin, his ships and his men, and what really went on. So for years they kept coming here, and they would leave messages here for other ships or leave mail in tin cans in the cairns, and then ships that were heading back to Europe, they would take the mail with them, or whaling boats that came this far as well, they would take the mail back, and maybe leave stores as well here, supplies, barrels. Had to make them very secure, though, of course, because the bears, they'd smash into the house if it wasn't well fortified. Now there's not much remains of the house. People have been coming here and actually collecting souvenirs, you know, taking pieces. There was a rowboat here, one of the long boats, a 24-foot clinker built, that was left here in case Franklin came back to here and walked here and needed a boat to row out Lancaster Sound and hopefully find a ship to take him back. But that rowboat was never used by Franklin, but eventually it fell apart over the eons of time, and the people took pieces of it, you know, for souvenirs. So, and also a lot of the tin cans. Franklin left a lot of them here, and you can still see the lead solder joining the tin cans together as well. So we're just about there, and people are milling about and having a look, and there's different cairns here from different expeditions. And of course, no one back then found Franklin. It was a true mystery as to what happened to him, but as we all now know, we've found the ships. Haven't found the man, though. Was he buried at sea, or is his grave still in the north somewhere? Just a pile of rocks, because of course they wouldn't be able to dig him under, would they? And maybe yet to be found somewhere. Anyways, it's very lovely. I love this fresh air. We're so lucky to have the weather on our side after that big storm a few days ago. Nature boy, you boy.
Yes, so we're going to leave Beachy there at that juncture. We decide in the ship that we're going to go over to Devon Island, and we sent a scouting boat, and I got to go into the scouting boat on land and see if Creswell Bay was a good place to bring all the passengers to shore. So we'll leave the mystery of where actually, you know, Franklin was buried. If he was buried, or did they cut a hole in the ice and drop him through? Yep. So let's go to Devon Island. Actually, Devon is the world's largest uninhabited island. I was doing some statistics on it, and Devon is like 1.5 times bigger than Vancouver Island, 2/3 size of Ireland, 10 times the size of Bali, 1/3 the size of South New Zealand. It gives you an idea. It's 55,000 square kilometers, and there are no Inuit villages on Devon. So the world's largest uninhabited island, and we stop there. All right, we've landed in Creswell Bay on Devon Island, and we're at the base of this tower of rock, this sandstone tower. You can hear the ocean lapping next to me, all the little pebbled beaches. It's a beautiful beach, eh? It's every little rock, which is about an inch across, is flat and kind of diamond-shaped or smaller, very flat. A gray. Every shade of gray you could imagine, it's here. Gray. All very, very dark sandstone. Oh, here's some sand as well. There we go. And then there's snow, of course. That hasn't gone away. It's, I suppose, there's 6 inches. In some places, though, I can see a foot or two. Depends on how the wind has blown it. And now I'm staring up the beach, and I have to crane my neck up about 700 feet, I guess. And really, we're far enough away from it, but, you know, maybe 200 meters from the base of the scree, you know, that skirt around the these big rocks, and up it goes, more of this gray going up, and it's all in layers, right, as sandstone would look, and the snow has accentuated the grain of the rock, and it's sheer, and lumpy bumpy too. It's kind of like one of those mud cakes or sand cakes that kids make down at Smelt Bay and Sandcastle Day, and they take the wet sand and then they pour it on, and then they pour more wet sand from a cup and pour more wet sand, so you get this kind of layered, lumpy kind of tower, and up and up and up and up it goes. And the one massive spire next to me here is, oh, I don't know, 200 meters across at the base, and then it just seems to almost overhang me here. A little spooky, but I am far, it's about 100 yards between me and the rubble that's at the bottom of this mountain, so I guess I'm outside the, what shall we call it, the explosion zone. And then to the right a bit, there's a separate tower, kind of the ones you Oh, how would you describe that going up? Like a great big finger straight up into the sky. The top of it across, I would say, is maybe 200 feet. And then it just stays like that, coming down for another 300 feet. So a great big black finger into the sky. Of course, the sky is very white. It's not snowing. It's just overcast. Light winds, not too bad at all. And then as a black finger tower comes down and down and down, it's just lumpy, lumpy, lumpy all the way down. And then there's these skirts of scree all the way down to the base of the mountain. I don't know if I'm doing it justice, but I'll tell you, it is a spectacle. And there's three of these towers all next to one another. Kind of like, you know, when Frodo and Sam went over the mountains to Mordor. This is the kind of stuff they'd have to go over when they were climbing the mountains. Ah! And then we've landed here. In the distance, it's different. Let me interrupt myself. It's the hills are low, very tapering. So this tower stands in amongst the sea of snow, going really as far as the eye can see. And there was a bear here, very close, about 2 miles away. We saw it from the ship, but there's a big bay between us and the bear, and we've got bear monitors and zodiacs looking to see if they see it. It'll take it quite a while for it to get anywhere near us here. And we've stopped here, second stop today, and there's an archaeological site up the slope here, and I believe it's Thule. We'll have a look when we get there. All right, and of course the sea is filled with multi-year ice pancakes, great big flat, and the lovely shade of blue, yes, and they're all beached. They're just sitting here just offshore, and the water is still that gunmetal gray. That's only about, I don't know, 2 or 3 below zero. All right. Let's see what's next.
Well, what is next is that bear that we had seen a couple of miles away. It appeared about only a mile away, and it was coming our way. Bears often travel very single-mindedly. It's not that they were coming, it was coming for us. It was just traveling, and they tend to follow their nose, and it was following something. Perhaps it could have been our scent going down there, but it was already moving along the beach when we came there. So we had to pack up. We couldn't bring the passengers to shore because if a bear's in the area, we split. We take off. We don't do any close encounters of that kind. So we had to leave, and the passengers didn't get to enjoy that wonderful monument of rock that was there. It was kind of neat, actually, being there. I was hired as the birdman and polar bear specialist, and the next day in Lancaster Sound, we actually come across a bear while we're on the ship. So let's go to there now and see what happens.
The morning of September 18th. We're in Lancaster Sound, heading southeast towards Arctic Bay. And that's on Baffin Island. We've decided to go to this community because the community of Grease Fjord on Ellesmere seems to be locked in on ice, and we haven't stopped in at a Inuit community, so we're going to go there. We had an early wake up this morning. I couldn't grab my recorder and take it off outside, but we had another bear, and this one is a female, and she was on a ice floe kind of the size of a large gymnasium. Not as tall, though. It was maybe blocks of ice were all stacked up, maybe up to about 10 feet or so, or maybe 15 feet. And each block was the size of a large refrigerator or freezer, and some blocks the size of small cars. And they were all stuck together on top of one another, making almost a pyramid shape, and frozen together. And it was all sea ice that had been jumbled together and pushed and shoved into this big pile. And it was out floating around in the Lancaster Sound, right next to some first-year ice. And the first-year ice really covered the whole horizon, and only it was only about a foot above the sea level, but it was just like a giant white sheet has been placed on the ocean as far as the eye could see all around us. But floating just off of it was this great big mumble-jumble of frozen sea ice. And the bear had gone to the edge of it when we were still quite a distance away, and actually fell through into the water. And of course they're very good swimmers, so they swam around and trying to find a place where it couldn't get up, and then it swam around to the back side of it. They used their front feet for swimming and back feet for steering. So they don't quite do, I guess you could call it doggy paddle, let's call it bear paddle, but just steer with their back. So they don't use all four. And found a place to get up, and then it got back up onto the ice floe. And then we approached probably within 150 meters or so, and we were downwind, so it couldn't smell us at all, could see us, but it really didn't care. That's the thing about these bears. So many of them, you know, they're not disturbed by large objects that look like super icebergs. No one shoots them from these big boats or anything like that, so they don't learn to associate fear most of the time with large ships. So, of course, people had to scramble out of bed, including yours truly, and get up on deck. And by the time I saw it, it was kind of nestled in between some of these big blocks, and it was rolling around on its back and rolling back side to side, and had all 4 feet up in the air. And my guess is that it was getting the snow onto its fur, and the snow, of course, would, you know, stick to any of the wet fur and dry it off. So it was busy drying itself off, and also it was licking the snow. So it was finding places where it would grab the snow with its teeth and eat it. And also I saw its tongue come out too, and it was actually licking the snow. The bear was thirsty. So,
on that note, I need to interrupt myself. I went and checked the facts, because when I reheard this a couple of days ago, reheard it, when I played it back, I wondered, oh, that doesn't sound right. A bear wouldn't be taking snow all the time and drinking it, because that's one bad way of cooling down and everything. And of course I recalled that there's actually a chemical reaction that happens in the bear's fat, right? And so they break down the fat and they get their water out of that, and their kidneys are very good for concentrating the salt from the blood plasma. So they concentrate the salt out, and it very concentrated urine. And so when they feed, for instance, they prefer the fat off the seals. And if they're a well-fed bear, they'll leave the carcass of flesh and bone behind, which, of course, is very advantageous for the teenage bears who aren't as good at hunting. And they, of course, will eat anything, like teenagers across the globe. But the adult bears prefer the fat. And, of course, because the fat is also metabolizes inside them better than the protein. Because protein takes water to break down. Oh, I looked all that up. Anyways, I just wanted to correct myself there. But here it was rolling around, and yes, of course, it would dry itself off with the snow on it, just, you know, adhering to the moisture in it. They're so well adapted to swimming. There was one recorded 60 miles off the coast of Labrador, and I saw one once off of in Hudson Strait, 23 miles from the nearest land. So that's a round trip of 46 miles. They're perfectly well adapted to swimming, and that's how they get from one part of the Arctic to the other during the summertime. Anyways, let's continue with George
myself, and I. And you're listening to CKTZ on Cortez Island. This show is called Nature Boy.
So that's how they drink. There you go. And the tongue is black when it comes out because a bear's skin is black. Underneath all that beautiful white fur, which is hollow actually, each hair of the bear is hollow. It's like a little tube, and lots of speculation about why it's hollow. Hollow, better insulator. And, you know, it's about 4 inches long, the fur, I would guess, something like that, 3 to 4 inches long, of course, with the down underneath. And other speculation is that the light goes down the hollow and goes down to the skin and warms up the bear from the little bit of sunlight, but maybe just a combination of both. But the skin of the bear underneath all that fur is black, and it shows best when it opens its mouth and its tongue comes out, black, 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 black. And it was licking away at the snow and enjoying that. And then, of course, she was looking quite adorable, if you think. I mean, it was just too much, you know, rolling on her back, eating snow. And here we were all perched on the ship, wherever there was a place out of the wind. The wind was blowing about 15 to 20 knots, so it was very fresh. I mean, temperature outside, it's like 5 below or something like that, or... And so it was quite cool. You had to find a place out of the wind. And I was on one of the wings just next to the bridge. And there was about a half a dozen people there and taking pictures and doing their best to try to get stable shots of the bear. And I think quite a few pictures were taken. And the blocks of ice, too, I should say, were this gorgeous blue, just the sweetest blue color. You know, imagine the blue you get in like one of those mint drinks, you know, where they have this, what would you say, is that aquamarine? Like the blue you see on icebergs sometimes, you know. Gorgeous, gorgeous blue. So that was our third bear. Great. I was drinking my coffee and enjoying that. And so now we're on our way into Arctic Bay. We'll have 7 zodiacs going to shore. And we'll shuttle people there. And we actually have to put up a perimeter of like tape there once we make a landing, because one of the things that happens when you get to an Arctic community is all the kids come out and they love to jump up and down on the zodiacs and love to get into, you know, right into the zodiac too. And of course that's not safe for them, and it's not really permitted. So we have to kind of, instead of just shooing them away, kind of somehow put up a perimeter so we can keep the kids out. It's one of the things you notice, the first thing actually one notices when it gets to the community is how many children there are. The average age in the Inuit communities is very low. Lots and lots of kids. And it's Sunday, so I'm not sure how busy it'll be. Other times I've been to communities in Sunday, they tend to be extremely quiet. But they are going to open up the co-op, which is like the great big general store. You can get clothes, you can get food, you can get guns, bullets. There may be some Inuit carvings. I'm going to see if I can find narwhal tusks in there and see how much they're selling them for. Of course, they would all have permits with them, the paperwork for them. Each community is permitted X number of narwhals to hunt. I'll see if I can interview somebody and find out how many they're allowed to get there. But it's a general store, you know, veggies, canned food, you name it, it's in there. Smokes, of course, and pop. Lots of Coca-Cola and chips. It's amazing how much pop is sold in these communities. So there you go. There's Arctic Bay on north end of Baffin Island. It used to be a mining town near next to the mine, nickel mine up on top of the hill. But I believe the mine is shut down now, and so the village has gone into another phase. We'll find out what people do there for a living. I suspect there's some trapping going on, maybe also some guiding. So there's a nutshell, from your naturalist. A little hoarse this morning, but feeling good. And my camera seems to have recovered. I dropped my camera in the water yesterday. Ow, in 4 inches of water. And I quickly pulled it out. And it seems to have woken up today after I put it on top of the television set here in my room and get it to dry out overnight. And although I see that the lens doesn't open up as quickly as it used to, so I've got it in a little tub of rice. I've had that suggested to me, so I've got it sitting there in a tub of rice to hopefully suck out the remaining moisture that might be trapped in there. All right, let's see what other adventure we can get into later.
All right, and that's exactly what we do. We do land in Arctic Bay. We hadn't landed at an Inuit community throughout the trip, and it was because on two occasions the weather was so bad that we couldn't launch the Zodiacs from the ship. You know, it was blowing 30 to 40 knots. I think we were supposed to get into Joe Haven down south. And so it's our first and actually last chance to go to an Inuit community, because we'll be traveling across a Baffin Bay and going over to Greenland next. So it was a great opportunity. And what I've noticed in the communities that get a few ships a year, the people aren't as interested in us. But Arctic Bay doesn't get ships coming in there very often. I know we were the only ones that year in 2016, and so we had quite a welcoming. So you can Google Arctic Bay. It's at the top end of Baffin Island. So it's right up there at the top end, so in the south of Lancaster Sound and Ellesmere Island. So it's right at the top end. So let's go to Arctic Bay and see what life is like in the little community, and visit the stores and check it all out. I've got a public service announcement, though, before we do that. On March the 17th at Hollyhock here on Cortes Island, there's going to be a Celtic night there. Of course, St. Paddy's Day. So March the 17th, which I think is a Saturday. So if you get a chance to go, and it's free. Oh, my goodness, something free in this world, like air. No, they'll get to air soon. Don't worry. They got water. They're charging us for that, right? The air is coming. It's only a matter of time. Okay, let's go to Arctic Bay, where the air is clean and free.
So we're in Arctic Bay. We've landed. It's a few inches of snow on the ground, maybe a couple degrees below zero. And a hunter's just turned up with a narwhal tusk right here. 6 foot narwhal tusk. It's about 2 inches thick at one end and right to a point at the other. It's all spiral. It looks like like what, pastry colored, eh?
But maybe another time, eh? When the ship comes.
And how big was the animal?
Around
15, 20 feet, or?
Around there.
Yeah?
Wow. Including this, need over 25.
25 feet. And did you shoot it?
Yes.
And then how did you stop it from sinking?
When it took a breath, I shot it.
Right.
And it floats.
They float?
Yeah.
Oh, they float when you shoot them, eh?
Yeah.
And how many permits does the town get for a year?
200-something.
200?
Yeah.
But they don't all get... Not everybody uses them up, eh?
We could, but the government moved different checks in springtime, summer, and fall.
Oh, I see.
Different numbers of tags.
Uh-huh. And which time of year are you allowed to take more of them?
Summer.
Summer. Oh, uh-huh. But there must be hard to get.
Yeah.
Hey, you're shy, huh?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But kill whales are always useful.
Yes, and then you brought it to the beach here?
Yeah, and they, on the other side, they go to the shore with the killer whales.
Oh, when the killer whales come, they go on shore?
Yeah.
Oh, to hide from them?
Well, even when there's no killer whales, they go along the shore.
Oh, I
see.
On
the other side.
Oh, on the other side. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Do they ever come right into the bay here?
Yes, there was couple days ago.
Oh, it'd be nice to see.
Few of them.
Oh, wow.
And lots of ring seals.
And how many narwhal do you get a year?
Roughly, I get 15.
15?
I don't know.
Uh-huh. And then,
depends.
It's no problem.
Uh-huh, depends on how it goes. And then yeah. Do you cut up all the meat and give it to the townspeople?
Yes.
Is that what you do? Everybody
yes.
does that, shares it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And especially, there's no jobs available.
Right.
Lots of people don't have jobs, so we give away lots of meat.
Oh, so they have something to eat.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's really, really important.
Yes.
What's your name?
Adrian.
George is mine.
Hi.
Thanks a lot, Adrian. And these are your two kids?
Yes.
Two girls?
Boy.
Boy. Nice. You look like your sister.
Yeah.
Does he hunt too? Does he go with you?
Soon.
Soon, eh?
Yeah.
I bet you're a good shot, eh? Hey, he's already been shooting, eh? Has he got 22?
No.
No, not yet, eh? How old is he?
5. He just turned 5.
And you? How old are you? 10. Oh, yeah. You a good shot?
No.
No, not yet?
Never yet.
Not yet, but she will be, won't she?
Maybe.
Maybe. All right, Adrian, thanks a lot. Thanks for letting me ask you all those questions. Okay, well, drive her around, never know. I'm one of the guides, so I'll let people know that you're selling this, and it's got the permit, right?
I have to go there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you have to go. And that's the permit, that little yellow tag?
That tag.
Oh, yeah, that's important, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, without that permit. Oh, yeah, and it's, what's it say? Oh, it's Canadian. Fisheries and Oceans, Summer Season, Admiralty Inlet, Marine Mammal Tag. Yeah, you need the paperwork, eh? You have to have that tag, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Well,
to get an export permit.
The export.
You gotta have that.
You gotta have the tag. Ah, yeah. Okay. Thanks, Adrian. Bye. All right. Well, there you go. A narwhal hunter wants $2,000 for that 6-foot, 6-foot tusk. I was just hesitating there because a bird just flew over. And I think it was a red pole. There you go. He's got his two kids on the back of the skidoo, and off he goes with his narwhal tusk tucked into the side of it. See if he can find someone who will pay him $2,000. That's quite steep, eh? Over $300 a foot. Oh, what's that flying? Oh, no. See, I'm checking out all the birds as I'm going. There's a family of ravens in the neighborhood here. So I'm seeing what else there is. People, of course, are going into the store. That's where I was just in a few minutes ago, where I got a phone card, $10 phone card, and I had to go to the hotel because the public phone at the store was not working. And I got in there and I called home. That was very nice. Better than nice. It's the first time we've come into a town since we left Kugluktuk. So first chance to call home. That was sweet. Very good. Now here are the streets. Well, they're packed snow. Not a lot of snow. Oh, there's kind of like a little snowmobile. Multi-track machines. I guess everybody must like it that the snowmobiles can come out. That's good. Hey, good for you, eh?
They have been very nice.
What you got there?
Beaver mitts.
Oh, you're selling them?
Yeah.
Oh, how much are you selling them for?
$60.
$60 beaver, eh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Want to look at them?
Wow. Did you make them or your
my
family?
Mother.
Your mom, eh?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a good deal, and that's like fur here, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, well, the thing to do is to stay it down at the dock as people come, eh? I'm one of the guides, eh? And show them. $60 is a very good price. Hopefully you can get it.
Unfortunately.
I'm glad that you're giving her a hand.
Well, I had a nice young man take me from here, all the way from here to the first building.
Yeah.
And then he took me to the halfway to the next building, and I gave up.
Good. It's good to... You got to know when your limit is.
Oh, I do.
Thanks a lot, eh?
Yeah.
That's great. All right. Well, here we are.
Did you see the longspur?
No.
Longspur, and I think a bunting, a red pole might have just gone by.
Oh, right.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I went to the hotel and called home.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, what about is there a payphone there?
Internet? What's that?
There's supposed to be an internet cafe here.
Right. I don't do internet. It's easier just to get on the phone. No, the hotel, I just use their phone.
Do they have a payphone there?
The Northern does, but it's broken. But they let me use it at the front desk, you know. I bought a card at the Northern.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
You're so old school, aren't you?
It's good. Well, you know what? I like to talk to my wife. You know what I mean? Talk to this old clickety 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 internet thing, you know? Yeah. You know. But you gotta talk, you know? Don't you think?
Yeah.
Unless you do a Skype thing. Dr. Doolittle said too. Yeah, I am old school. I'm very old school. And it's
got
good.
A variety show at the end of the trip. I've got a joke about the internet.
All right, we'll see you later. I love this building. Okay, so there you have it, old school Cirque. Yeah, wandering around Arctic Bay. So the houses are coming blue. They're low, one-story buildings. Up on posts, of course. This is permafrost, so you have to have the buildings off the ground, or else the heat from the building will melt the ground underneath and make them sag. Green is very popular too, lots of green. Metal roofs on top. Some buildings have several stories. I hear there's two hotels here in town. There'll be an RCMP station here somewhere. I think there's about 1,000 people here in Arctic Bay. So what I see is it's like a big horseshoe bay. And let's say it's about almost 2 miles across. Not quite in the bay itself. So imagine great big horseshoe. And then buildings all the way around the bay. Brown ones tend to be over here on the right. As I face, I guess that's north there. Oh no, that's facing south. Here comes another skidoo. And like I said, blue and green are very popular. But there's brown. Now I'm in the brown part of town. I see a little church coming up here. And then all around are big hills. They look like they rise about 700 feet. So on all three sides of the horseshoe, right, with a scree coming down. I guess up on top somewhere I see a road going up. Must be the airport. This is how you travel around from one community to another in the wintertime. I mean, sure, you can go by Skidoo, but boy, long ways. Arctic Bay, whoa. I guess Pond Inlet is the closest. And that's probably like 200 miles away. That'd burn a lot of fuel getting there. So really, to get out of town here, you pretty well have to fly. Horrendous costs for flights. I'll see if I can find somebody and find out how much it costs. But
I did look that up yesterday, and it's $7,500 return from Edmonton. You got to get yourself to Edmonton in Alberta. So $7,500 return.
If you wanted to go to, let's say, Ottawa or Toronto, I bet you it costs $10,000. Well, am I exaggerating? Make it $7,000 then, and that's a return trip too. So a big horseshoe-shaped bay, and maybe three streets paralleling the horseshoe all the way around, especially here at the head of the bay. And then just one road on each side of the bay. Winds blowing in, a few pellets. Ravens are everywhere. The ravens are everywhere. Here's some guests. So I'll see if they have anything to say about themselves. Hey there!
Hey!
Can I ask you a couple questions?
Sure.
What do you think about this place?
I think this is a lovely little hamlet.
What makes it lovely to you?
Oh, it's got snow and ice and cute little girls.
Nice. What's your name?
Jenna.
Jenna. Were you born here?
No.
Where were you born?
Ottawa.
Oh, you were born in Ottawa. Your mom went to Ottawa and you had you there, eh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's a long ways to go. Have you been to Ottawa since you were born? Have you gone back? Yeah, no? You've just been here? What grade are you in?
6.
Are you going to school tomorrow?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Where's the school?
Green
The big building, eh? Uh-huh. Grade 6, eh? Oh, good for you.
How many brothers and sisters?
Yeah. How many brothers and sisters have you got?
5 and 6.
Five and six? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you got lots of them. Are you the youngest?
The oldest.
You're the oldest. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. And where's your mom now? She's at home, maybe? Neat. What's the favorite thing about being here? What do you like the most here? How about the internet? Do you like the internet?
Yeah.
Tell me why. Why do you like the internet? You can talk to your friends?
Yeah.
Skype?
Yeah.
You like Skype?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, you're a very positive girl. Look out. Okay, thanks, eh? So tell me, what do you think about this place, Maureen?
I like all the colored houses. They stand out in the snow. I like the waterfront properties with the wonderful view.
Yes. Yeah, can you describe for my listening audience what the view looks like?
Well, there's snow-covered mountains. There's a wonderful ship in the bay. There's...
Did you go up to the Heritage Center?
Yes, we did.
And what was up there?
Local-made crafts, which were very interesting. There was a display with a woman, a man, and a child all dressed in native costume, and that was very nice.
Uh-huh.
Well worth visiting.
Yeah, well, it's our first town, village, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And maybe our only one in Canada, too.
Maybe.
Yeah, so it's nice to get off, isn't it? Did you see the fellow with the narwhal tusk for sale?
No.
Oh, Adrian is his name. If you see a fellow with a skidoo going by, I know there's a lot of skidoos here, but when you see, and he's got two kids on the back, you know Adrian?
Yeah.
Yeah, and what's his daughter's name? Is it Jenna?
No, her name's Jenna.
No, you're Jenna. Adrian's got two kids with him, right? So there's a girl in the back and in a blue coat, and then there's...
Hi.
Hello.
No, the boy's in the back, and she's in behind him. So if you see him going back and forth here in a skidoo, right? Not one of these things.
Oh.
He's got the... 6-foot narwhal tusk along the step board or whatever of the skidoo, and he's selling it $2,000.
Wow. Ooh.
It's a beauty. So look out for him and flag him down if you see him. He's totally into showing it to you.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
How
I'm off.
Your little boy?
Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
One.
There we go. Some of the local people here, local activities, and a couple of our guests. All right, I'll just go along here and just take a little break for a moment. So I'm in the Heritage Center now, and there's a little bit of a museum here with some clothing made out of seal skin and a little sled and hunters with harpoons, you know, like mannequins, of course. Beautiful seal skin coats, different colors of seal skin sewn together in a mosaic. It's so hard to describe, but kind of like a Persian rug, but instead of being made out of wool, it's made out of pieces of seal skin. Really neat, very neat. And there's a refrigerator here, and kamiks made from seal skin and caribou hide. So I open up the freezer, and there's mittens in here, made out of seal skin, frozen, kept nice and frozen, because if they thaw out, they start to rot. And a small pair of small booties, seal skin booties, kamik is the boot, and it's got embroidery at the top, and looks like wool felt, and they're white, they're about 6 inches high, and looks like a size for a 5-year-old girl, or boy, if they like to wear that color. White with pink trim, and then some gloves as well. Oh yeah, they are for sale. The gloves are $138. Arctic bay made out of sealskin mitts. Wow, and they're inside out. The fur is on the inside, right? To keep them cozy, and then the skin is on the outside. So they've got they're tan colored. There we go. Some harpoons, and then carvings, of course. Lots of marble here. Walruses on their back and bears. And this pink, it's almost like a pink marble. A small walrus about 9 inches long and 4 inches high, lying on his back. And pink, beautiful pink type of marble. $575 if you're interested. Oh, some jewelry as well. Oh, and there's gloves and hats and more mitts. These mitts aren't in the freezer, so I guess they're not... they're made out of felt and wool. And they're woven, knitted ones. And then there's wall hangings, some nice drawings on, looks like felt. $161. There you go. And some nice prints as well. Different prices. $55 for nice lino type prints. Quite neat. Oh, Arctic Bay mug. So what you got?
An explorer that learned how to drum dance.
Ah, that's good. Has a little figurine. That'd be seal skin, eh? That little coat?
It's caribou.
Caribou, oh yeah.
Seal skin pants though and boots.
Yeah, seal skin pants and boots. There you go. It's about a figure about 10 inches high. And it's definitely a Caucasian with a toque and a big beard. And he's got a drum, the traditional drum, which is a circle stretched leather with a handle. It looks like a great big lollipop, right? And in real life, that would be almost 18 inches across, but in this case, it's only about 2 inches across. And there's other dolls, figurines here, again, made out of seal skin. About 18 inches high. Lots of toys, lots of toques here. Knitting is big here. Oh yeah, they got lots of knitted toques. Eh? That's nice. I like toques, blue and white. Mm-hmm. So lots of crafts being sold here. Oh, here's a muskox horns, not antlers. Of course, they have horns. They're in the goat family, aren't they? And the horn is $400. All nicely cleaned up. About 2 feet across. Came of a good size animal at one time. And of course, your ubiquitous coffee cups. And oh, the knives. I'm big on knives. Let's see how much the knives are. Let's see, does it say Arctic Bay on the knife? I collect knives. Yeah, I'm just opening it up out of its sheath with one hand while I'm holding the microphone in the other. Oh, let's see. Ooh, that's a nice sharp knife. Oh, is that ever sharp? Nice. Nice knife. But it's made somewhere else. It's not made here. Steel. I'm not quite interested in that knife, though. And then the Uluk knives. $92. Those are the ones, of course, they use to skin the seals traditionally.
Is that just for the decorations in the house?
Yeah. Although they would use them. Oh, they have a sharp. They would use them here. They would use them here, too. Anyways, I'm overheating. Time to go out. So anyways, a little bit of shopping gives you an idea. We should actually go to the northern store. That's where we should go. And see how much a head of lettuce costs or a pound of tomatoes, eh? What do you think? Okay, here we go. You were there. So I'm back outside, just walking down one of the side streets next to the school. Inu Jack School. Hey, Boston, eh? Mmm. Yeah. Big Boston Bruins sweatshirt. Apparently the hockey player Lenny McDonald was here and brought the Stanley Cup to Arctic Bay. I think it was this year. I'm not sure about that. Hockey, of course, is big. These buildings, they have two lights on the outside, and one is blue and one is red. And my understanding is when you have a shortage of water, you turn on your blue light and they'll come and deliver you water, the tanks in the house. And then if your septic tank fills up to a certain point, a red light comes on, and then the big truck comes and pumps out the sewage and then takes it to the sewage ponds and dumps it there. So they're really totally like self-sufficient in a way, where they take care of all their needs that way. So I'm still working my way to the northern store. Oh, there's the big truck. That's obviously the sewage truck. That is one dirty, dirty truck. I mean, mud-wise anyways, right? Okay, and surrounded by this, I didn't mention, but now that it stopped snowing, I can see the rocks of the hills around me and their red sandstone. There's a fair number of buildings all boarded up too here. There used to be a mine, as I mentioned, nearby, a nickel mine, but it's no longer functioning. As Adrian mentioned, that's the narwhal hunter. No jobs. Not many jobs, no. Okay, I'm almost at the store. All right, I'm in the co-op store. There's an orange. And how much
$9.99.
The orange?
The orange.
Oh, that's a good price for an orange, isn't it? Yabba dabba dabba. All right. Okay, let's see. Just some regular stuff. Grapes. A small bag of grapes, I'd say. Maybe there's a... Oh, I don't know if it's even a kilo of them. $16.99. Or green grapes. Fresh, of course. Same price. Oh, what else we got here? Oh, we got butter. Oh, butter. Oh, that's not too bad. Oh, half a pound for $3.50. £10. $10 a pound of butter. Okay. Let's see, frozen macaroni dinner. I don't see the price of that. A bag of wieners, $11. $7 for just regular hot dogs. That doesn't seem too bad. $14 for a brick of cheese. Frozen fruit medley. $8 for maybe half a pound. Eggos, everybody knows Eggos. $9. There we go, so things do add up. A tin of Campbell's soup. Let's see. 99 cents. We can afford that, can't we? Make it sound cheap, don't I? Oh, salmon, rose salmon. 99 cents. Buffalo-style chicken wings. You know, one of those frozen boxes. $29.99. Chicken breast fillets, frozen ones. Uncooked, 1 kilo, $33. Oh, yeah. Hey, that adds up. Hey, certain things, of course, are way more expensive. You know, those 12 double rolls of toilet paper, $18. Yeah, $18. Or if you want 30 jumbo rolls of Purex toilet paper, $40. Yup. Oh, and they got the great coats, eh? Warm. Look how warm those coats are. Beautiful. Ready for winter, huh? Yeah, super coats. $160 for a child's coat. Oh, it comes with pants, too. Though.
Oh, snowsuit.
Yeah, it's a snowsuit. Oh, those are great. Those are pink. Pink boots.
Hottest chick on board.
Yeah. How much?
I don't know. I don't know
when you get lost on the ice.
No, well, yeah. You know. Hardware store. Oh, gloves are always interesting because they always had such great gloves. Where are the gloves? Everybody's having a good look. Oh, I'm sorry. Different. I don't see the gloves. I should buy something, though. What should I buy? Oh, not much. Maybe I'll buy some gum. Okay, so, oh, there's a washing machine. Well, would you like a washing machine? How much is a Whirlpool washing machine? Oh, I don't see a price on it. Tells you how much energy you save if you use it. Huh. I guess you have. Oh, of course, bullets. You have to have bullets. And flares. Bullets for your gun. All that stuff. Oh, soap. Okay, you know, one of those little tub, little bottles of Ivory Snow dish detergent. $6.25. Well, all stuff could either be flown in, if it's fresh, or come in on the ship. Looks like the fresh stuff is the most expensive, eh? There was some lettuce here back here and carrots. I don't see prices on stuff, though. Broccoli. Always a little bit of broccoli. Let's see how much a little bit of broccoli. One big broccoli head. Oh, that's not too bad. $5. Something seems to be reasonable. Anyways, going to head out. Check it out. So, there's a sample of that store. How do we get out? This side, I guess. There we go. And back into beautiful fresh air. So, a little bit of shopping. Some stuff's really expensive, eh? About those buffalo wings or toilet paper. Yaga, yaga, yaga. Okay, time to go back to the ship. There's your little bit of a tour of Arctic Bay, Baffin Island. You were there. I'm in the other store now. And there's a program by the federal government, and it's called Nutrition North. And what they do is they subsidize, the government subsidizes the cost of nutritious food, like versus potato chips and pop and stuff like that. So Driscoll's little tub of strawberries, £1, $8.15, blackberry $7.50 for one of those 170-gram containers, little tub of grapes, $10. Oh, limes are only 85 cents each. Grapefruit, small grapefruits, almost $3. Kiwi, $1.29, not too bad, eh? A kale salad kit for $9.39. So I guess the stuff is like twice as expensive as home. I don't know how much the tomatoes are. Oh, beefsteak clamshell tomatoes, $3.50, eh? Wonder how, that's for four tomatoes. So, you know, that's the government subsidy. You can get asparagus here, mushrooms, carrots, green giant celery hearts, romaine hearts, green onions, peppers, kale, lots of stuff. And then, of course, you got your ice cream. A tub of ice cream is $10. Cool Whip, is that your favorite? $12. Old South orange juice, you know, those little frozen containers that you have to add water to. It's $3.40. But if we go over to the Oreo cookies, you know, your little tub of box Oreo cookies, 300 grams, they're $12. Or your Fudgios originals, $12.19. Chips Ahoy, a little 300 gram bag, $12. So that those are, there's your subsidies. Subsidy less. Stone Wheat Thins, $6. Lemon creams, you know, those little cookies, $18. Fig Newtons, everybody knows Fig Newtons, they're $11.79. So there's your serious money, eh? Do you like Tang? $8 for a tub. There we go. Kool-Aid. Oh, Kool-Aid singles. Look at those little things. $7.79. Okay. All right. How about frozen TV dinner? See, would you expect that here? Hungry Man. $10. Gourmet steamers. $10. Frozen pizza. $8. Eh? Yeah. Do you have any gloves here?
Yes, the last aisle, sir.
Okay. Okay. Down here? Yeah. All right, gloves. Okay, let's see. I always like looking at the gloves, like I said in the previous store, because they always have such incredible gloves. Warm. Well, those are nice, $30 pair. I mean, for these skidoos, eh? Hot packs, eh? Gloves with tigers on them, great. Oh, everything's of course really super well insulated. $30 pair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fun stuff, eh? Gum boots, of course. Mm-hmm. I do see a note here, a job offer, 2! The RCMP are actively looking for a new guards, matrons for the upcoming year. If you're 19 years old, don't have any criminal records, you can be hired immediately. There we go, Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Give them a call, 439-0123. That's easy, isn't it? 0123, box 162, Arctic Bay, Nunavut. All right. Well, there's a job offer right there.
We don't have to go back.
No, you don't. No, that's right. Oh, the posters, community choice, public service announcements. It's time for this year's community cleanups. There will be a cleanup day in each community across Nunavut, but the date will vary depending on snow cover. Please contact your local hamlet office or Department of Environment staff regarding when the cleanup takes place. That was posted June 13th. Actually, the town is quite clean outside. The Iqaluit Hunters and Trappers will be hosting a public meeting in regards to polar bear season on September 27th at the Westside Community Hall. Oh, I go, of course, hunt the polar bears. That's Canada for you, eh? What else? Oh, there's stuff in syllabic. Oh, okay. Oh, the hunting. Oh, good shot. There we go. Please use up. So I've caught up to Adrian again, and he has sold his tusk. You right?
Yes.
And okay, what's your name?
Janice Parker.
And you are the proud owner of a narwhal tusk.
Almost. First tusk to get back to Ontario.
Yes, of course. And Adrian's going to ship it for you.
Yes, he is.
And tomorrow he's going to get the paperwork, of course.
Yes.
For he's got the little tag on it, but he's got to get the official export permit.
Correct.
Why did you buy it?
Well, last year I did this very same trip.
Oh.
And I bought a tusk in Greenland, who they said was up. I had all the paperwork, I'd have no problem, and the customs officers took it. I never saw it again.
In Canada?
In Canada.
No.
Yes, I was quite upset.
I bet, and that set you back
a... Yeah, a little bit of money.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
This is a very, even though Adrian would have liked a bit more, he doesn't understand, I've already paid the same amount for another narwhal tusk I never received.
Right, right. So you cut a deal with him.
We did.
Oh, good.
Actually, my agent cut a deal.
Oh, your agent cut a deal for with it. Oh, good, good. So you're happy.
Sort of.
Yeah, well, it's gone, isn't it? Cheeseburger, cheeseburger, cheeseburger.
Yes.
And what are you going to do when you get home with it?
I've got a polar room at my place in Halliburton, and I'll add it to it.
Wow. I've always wanted one, you know. And that's a beauty, too. That's a very, very, very nice big one. Yeah, super. Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot. All right, okay. Oh, well, there we go. We have a sale. I wonder how much she paid for it. I'm guessing maybe half as much? Maybe $1,500? I'll ask her later in private. Okay. Now we're at the beach helping to load. I better put my gum boots on. And that was the footnote. Here are the kids.
We're like you.
Okay, folks, I have room for 7 more.
Hold it here then.
And that's the end of our visit to Arctic Bay, Baffin Island. You're listening to CKTZ on Cortez Island Radio. My name is George Sirk. Nature Boy is the name of the show. And if you go to the CKTZ website and look up Nature Boy under radio shows, there'll be 4 other shows that are blogged, my first 4. And this one will eventually end up there, too. It's kind of interesting to hear, myself wandering around that store. I mean, I think the $31 for the chicken breasts was the one that really surprised me here, and I was kind of downplaying, oh, that's not too bad. But if you start adding up, you know, actually doing a shopping, how expensive it is, and of course all those fruits like, you know, grapes and strawberries, not an Inuit not in a normal diet, of course, and they get so much of their minerals and vitamins from eating the seal fat and
and the narwhal fat. And I did find out that that tusk went for about $1,800. So Adrian got a good price for it. And then he, you know, has some money to spend at the co-op store and buy himself some food or supplies, whatever he needs. Yeah, and we'll be leaving next week. I won't be here, so we'll wait a couple of weeks before I take you offshore to Baffin Bay. But since we've been listening to all this wind and all this recordings, I can't resist but to play Flanders and Swan, their song, The Song of Reproduction, before we go to Costa Rica for a few minutes before I end my show in just a couple of minutes. Okay, here we go.
This is a song of reproduction. I had a little gramophone. I'd wind it round and round. And with a sharpish needle, it made a cheerful sound. And then they amplified it. It was much louder then. And you sharpen fiber needles to make it soft again. Today for reproduction, I'm as eager as can be. Count me among the faithful fans of high fidelity. High fidelity. Hi-fi's the thing for me. With an LP disc, an FM set, and a corner reflex cabinet. High frequency range, complete with auto change. All the highest notes, neither sharp nor flat.
The ear can't hear as high as that.
Still, I ought to please any passing bat.
With my high fidelity.
Who made this circuit up for you, anyway? Bought it in a shop. Ooh, what a horrible shoddy job they fobbed you off with. Surprised they let you have it in this room anyway. The acoustics are all wrong. If you raise the ceiling 4 feet, put the fireplace from that wall to that wall, you'll still only get the stereophonic effect if you sit in the bottom of that cupboard. I see you've got your negative feedback coupled in with your push-pull input-output. Take that across through your redhead pickup to your tweeter. If you're modding more than 8, you're going to get wow on your top. Try to bring that down through your preamp rumble filter to your woofer. What'll you get? Flutter on your bottom. High fidelity, FFRR for me. I've an opera here that you shan't escape. On miles and miles of recording tape. High decibel gain is easy to obtain. With the tone control at a single touch.
Bel canto sounds like double Dutch.
Then I never did care for music much. It's a high fidelity.
I just looking at the time. It's only got about 4, 5, 6 minutes to go before the end of the show, and I won't be able to get to Costa Rica and give Jack Ewing his time to speak with me. Kim and I were there in December, stayed at his lodge, so Hacienda Barru. I'll have to wait a couple of weeks because there's a couple of segments after that as we walk around Hacienda Barru and listen to all the wildlife, and especially the birds. In, let me see, on the 18th of March here on Cortes Island, I'll be giving a talk on Costa Rica at the AGM of the Cortes Island Museum and Archives Society. I'll have some photographs along with my talk, so if you're on Cortes or around the area, if you want to come and catch that, I believe the doors are at 1:30, but there'll be announcements in our local Tidelines website, so... It's been a pleasure. I'm going to leave you with more Flanders and Swan because they are just too good. Next song is the Gnu song. I had a show at CFUV in Victoria for 4 years, and I just love playing them. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks. My name is George Cirque. You've been listening to Nature Boy. And let's go back to Flanders and Swan. This is recorded May the 2nd, 1959. Of course, in... Jolly old.
This is perhaps a good moment to explain that we don't normally have these things standing around here, but tonight they are recording this stereophonically, in fact, for posterity. So wherever you're sitting now, that's where you'll be on the record. So. Sit up. Sit up. Sit up nice and straight. Any of you feel like rolling in the aisles or being carried out helpless with mirth, this is a jolly good night to do it. Do you want to say hello to posterity?
Hello!
Hello, posterity. We sort of move around a bit. They'll use it for demonstration purposes. But it helps, you know. We've had a lot of luck with records. Some of the songs that have made our names a household word, like Slop Bucket, are the little series of animal songs that we've been writing, mostly for Ian Wallace, an artist we very much admire. We have several of his paintings at home. We're often asked how we write these songs, often asked why. It's not always easy to say exactly how the idea for a song first comes, but I can, as it happens, tell you how I first got the idea for this next song. I live in Kensington, naturally. Battersea. He calls it South Chelsea. Now, it's very, very much snobby for me. You turn left by Ponting's Dustbins. Scarsdale Villa, sort of decayed gentility. Very nice there, you know, open trees, all right, very happy there, smokeless. The road itself is a bit of a snag. That road has got the steepest camber on it, you know, the old slope, of any road in London. It's about 1 in 3. If you park your car by the pavement, as people do from time to time, the car's tilted like that. Well, now, that means you can only get this near side door open a little bit, then the pavement stops it, you see? You want to use this door, you're going to make a jump for it. Bad enough, all up and down the road, but just outside where I happen to live, 1A, of course it would be, it's just like the Great North Face of Everest. Things right over its side. You can't get this door open at all. You've got to keep it full of petrol or it shows empty. I can't use this door. I've got to get out, get to this thing. You see, on the pavement. Well, I wrote to the local council about this. Very nice about it, you know, elections coming up and so on. But then we have got a jolly decent lot of old burghers on our council. Get them sticking up flags on the town hall, I'll tell you that much. Then our council is, of course, strictly non-political. They're all conservatives. They took a bite out of the paper. They didn't do it themselves. They sent a chap round. A chap with a chain round his neck. And there is just one spot now where I can drive up in a comparatively lordly fashion and get out very nicely. Thank you. Thanks to the borough engineer, you see. At least I could. But you know, every day, when I get back from my daytime work with the submerged log company, I find another car has parked in that spot. Would you credit it? Always the same one. Day after day, a great big, horrible, flashy thing with teeth. It's got an engine at both ends. Never seen the owner, just the car. I have done everything to shift it, you see me?
Oh.
I put little notes under the windscreen wiper saying, do not park here. You shall smart for this. I keep putting orange boxes out there, as you have to, you know. I'm fed up with oranges. I stick pins into wax models of his big end. There it is next day. Large as life, twice as large. It's not one of the neighbours. This chap, whoever he is, he comes for miles to park his car in that spot. Never get hold of it. Might be anybody. The whole of London might even be one of you. If anybody here tonight is in the habit of parking their car in Scarsdale Villas, might I ask you, would you leave it up the far end? Up at the Pembroke Arms, give it a treat. Not always bang outside 1A. Thank you very much. The number of this car, I'll never forget this number as long as I live. I've sat gazing at it for hours on end sometimes, thinking of nothing else. Number is 346GNU.
You're listening to CKTZ on Cortez Island. You can listen to us at CortezCommunityRadio.ca.